This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
I don't expect us to be big spenders in free agency or anything like that. We still have to manage this cap because we're not going to try and set this thing up to go into a year where we got to strip it all down while we got number 17. We want to give him every chance, every single year, to see if that team can contend for a title.
Bills GM Brandon Bean. The cap is a goofy thing, but I'm ready to say that that is not the energy the Bills should have right now. We never want to get to a year where we have to strip it down. You might never have to do that. I want to read you something from Brett Coleman of NFL writer, the Bootleg Podcast. He does great work for the Film Room on YouTube, Bootleg Football, Underdog Fantasy. On the Eagles, there's a lot about the Eagles model, right? Yeah. Get there with four. The Eagles, by the way, have three free agents. The top three free agents that are hitting the market defensively, the top three are Eagles players. It's wild.
Josh Sweat, Milton Williams,
and Zach Bond.
Zach Bond, yeah. The linebacker.
CBS Sports has saw a ranking of the top 25 defensive free agents. I want the Bills to sign six of these players. And three were Eagles. Anyway, yeah. Brett Coleman writes this about the Eagles and their cap. And I'm not trying to get too weighed down here on salary cap stuff, but I think that the Bills need to ditch this idea that they're going to get into trouble if they sign too many players. And it might require ownership to pay more money and give more money right away. Here's what Brett Coleman wrote about the Eagles. Because he pointed out, first off, like this is a little bit of the business side of the NFL. So give me a minute on this, and if you want to give a call, that'd be great. Just a general point. We mentioned yesterday that the salary cap is likely to explode again because streaming numbers are about to start to be counted. If you watch it on a stream, it will now be counted in a way that it has not been before. And all these new revenue streams are coming in as well. And Netflix might get in on the bidding. 2029, the league can opt out of its broadcast deals and get brand new ones. And what will happen? They will get unbelievable amounts of money. And Coleman's point is that GMs should plan for this. And especially, is where I'll add, GMs that feel safe should do this, that feel like they're stable with a quarterback and with a coach. Coleman wrote, if I'm a GM next year, maybe even this year, I can sign outrageously backloaded deals with a ton of funny money that slams home in 2030 and not even care about the math. And then he wrote about the Eagles and said, if I did my math right, the Eagles have about $216 million of dead cap from void years that hits in 2029, and that is from four contracts. Mm-hmm. Four contracts. That's Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts, Jordan Mailata, and Landon Dickerson. Those four deals, the Eagles will have $216 million in dead cap all at once in 2029. And another $53 million in dead cap from A.J. Brown in 2030. So you're up to $269 million in dead cap on five contracts. And he says, basically, what the Eagles are probably planning to do is the cap will go up by then, what, $100 million more?
Yeah.
That if you are forecasting, you're Bean, you're the Bills, you need your owner to do this, you need your owner to pay the money, because it all has to go into escrow, right? If you're going to sign a contract for a guy for crazy money. Anyway, as Coleman's doing this, Joe, this is him laying out how they are going to get Myles Garrett.
The Eagles are going to get Myles Garrett.
Says, Jeffrey Lurie sold 8% of the team a couple months ago to get $650 million in cash. Did the Bills just do that?
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. Sold this, a part of the team. Just here's a check for more money. Says other revenues come in, $700 to $800 million that just come in from team revenue and league revenue share. He writes, that's more than enough liquid to get Myles Garrett on a league minimum salary and just pay him in option bonuses to keep cap hits low until the heat death of the universe. Basically, yeah. Buy a championship is kind of... I saw some accusing the Eagles of that. The Eagles have two top 10 receiver salaries, a top 5 quarterback salary, top 5 running back salary, top 5 tight end salary, expensive offensive line. If they bring back all these free agents on defense, if they want to, these top 3 guys, just backload those deals. It's guaranteed money for these players.
Yep.
The Bills should not be operating like they are on some tight budget. They are one of the teams over the cap right now. But again, the cap exists where just extend everybody and put the money in 2030.
Right. Well, because they have led the league in past years. Was it 2 years ago? And maybe even there was another year where they were number one in the league in like cash spent. But this year, I think they were like sixth or seventh. And while you were talking there, I just went through, looked at SpotTrack has like a multi-year tracker. So you can look at how much cash each, not cap, how much cash is each team spending year to year to year, all the way through 2030. And you do see the Eagles jump out. Like 2028, for instance, how much cash are they on the hook for right now that they're going to spend?
In 2028.
The Eagles are going to spend $127 million in 2028 already.
So that the thing about that is it's key. That money is already out of the owner's pocket.
Right.
The checks have been written.
Right. The Bills in 2028, it's $54 million. So it's less than half.
And how much of that is Josh?
And Josh might be like all of it. I could actually tell you in a moment here. But like there are only a couple of teams. Is there only two others that are due, like, in terms of that number? Like, who's got money backloaded a lot? Like, years down the road. The other two teams that I'm seeing that have huge numbers like that is Dallas and Detroit. Those two teams, same thing. Like, they've got a ton of money,
yeah,
that they cash that they are on the hook for in those years. And the Bills are not really, maybe their deals are just not designed the same way. I mean, you compare Allen and Hurts, for instance, and yeah, like Hurts never has, this is the same thing with a Garrett, if he never got a thing. Hurts never has a base salary more than $1.5 million in his whole contract. That's his highest base salary, is 1.4 in 2028. And everything else is like signing bonuses and then those void years at the end. Allen, like this year, what's his salary? $14 million. What's it next year? $22 million. $14 million, $10 million, and it's been big salary numbers before. So whatever it is, like the way the Bills are designing contracts, at least Allen's contract, is far different than what the Eagles have done. And if they're buying a championship and there's a way to do that, then everybody should be doing that. Everybody that, well, what do you need then? You need an owner that's ready to pay money up front like that. And because the Bills just sold 10%, maybe you might think that they're more willing and able to do that, versus like I would never expect the Raiders to be a team that would do that.
Right.
Or the Bengals, you know, but the Raiders especially, like those are just teams and owners I don't expect to have the liquid capital up front ready to do what like the Eagles have done.
Well, the thing about who would do it, you might not be an owner that loves to do it all the time. When you are on the doorstep of the Super Bowl, it's time to do it. Do you really want to win it?
Right.
This is where ownership commitment comes in. And I don't think that the owners have been cheap by any stretch, but it's just...
No, like I said, they've led the league in
yes,
cash spending.
Yeah, right. Yeah. This just comes down to more. You're on the doorstep. How do you want to put together the best team ever, or do you want to put together, you know, a chemistry experiment? He's 29 years old, third oldest quarterback in the AFC. Granted, there will be older ones when like Rodgers and Russell Wilson land in their spots or whoever goes wherever.
If they do, it's possible that he's the third oldest by week one.
It is possible. But the larger point is that quote from Bean. Like, I don't. Next time we talk to him, I don't want to hear that again. I'm not going to get into a spot where I got to tear it down. What if it got you a Super Bowl? Thanks for doing it. The job is not avoiding a teardown. The job is building something great as best you can. And I do want to say you should pull out all the stops. You should cut the brakes. It should be everything you can do. If the owner's willing to commit this way and the GM's just, you know, don't spend the money on bad signings. But if you can add three huge pieces to your defense or whatever it is, you should be swimming in those waters. The Eagles are swimming in those waters. They made two Super Bowls in the last 4 years. They have a Super Bowl win. And, I mean, I don't know if they're going to be a dynasty, but they have the best roster in football. And part of the reason they're able to do it is because the way that they do their contracts. And betting that dead cap money in the future just won't be that big of a problem. And that's probably a good bet. Yeah. So I'm kind of obsessed with this idea right now. And I don't want to hear about being responsible at this spot. I understand the Bills are already in a spot where they have to still do more work to get under the cap.
Yeah.
The teams that are over the cap, it's not exactly a good group to be a part of. It's the Bills, the Browns, the Saints, and the Falcons. And those other three teams are not thought of as cagey, smart teams with money.
Well, and the other difference there is, like, this is only one of the levers the Bills have to pull. This is why I think they're seen as having more flexibility than those teams. What's one big piece of your flexibility? You're sure your quarterback's going to be around for a long time. You know you're going forward with the same quarterback. So what can you do? I can throw his money down the road. If you're the Browns, I don't want to do that. I'm not throwing Deshaun Watson money down the road so that I have to keep him longer. If I'm the Saints, I'm not pulling a lever to restructure Derek Carr's contract because that means Derek Carr's probably got to be in New Orleans longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm trying to move on from guys quicker, Atlanta, same thing. You're not doing that with Kirk Cousins. So when you have the franchise quarterback, I think that is a little bit easier. This would be a question maybe for like Mike Gianitti too, or another cap guy. I don't know. Like what is the consequence of what the Eagles have done with Hurts? Like when that contract gets to that point, when he's 30 years old,
yep.
And it's 2028, 2029, and he's got that massive number and all those void years after. Like what can they then do? Like do they have a harder time like extending him or restructuring? Like is there a consequence to what they've done versus what the Bills have done? Because I wonder if the Eagles might say, If it's tough for us to keep Jalen Hurts when he's 31 years old, like that's the cost of doing business, whereas a team like the Bills or the Chiefs would never in their right mind do that.
Right. Dead cap, I mean, maybe I'm wrong here, but isn't dead cap effectively like luxury tax?
Sure, yeah.
Because,
okay. Yeah.
If
luxury tax, like NBA, baseball, you go over the salary cap, you just have to spend.
Right.
You have to give the like 50% more.
Is that not what the NFL really does here? The Eagles can have this incredible roster. You're asking, like, Hurts is going to get that money. When there's a $53 million dead cap hit, you're not paying that money. You've already paid it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just now it goes on your books.
Right.
So, all right, let's just play the game. If the salary cap right now is $280, if you could know, this is what Brett Coleman is kind of getting into, and apologies if this is a little too in the weeds on the money side of it, but I'm trying to set the table for, forget it. Go get everybody. Go sign the Monstars. If I told you, listen, the Bills are going to trade for Garrett and sign him, and the dead cap hit on this is going to be $70 million in 2030. Wow, that's terrible. But the cap will be $550. Oh, okay. That's right. Not that bad anymore. I'm still going to have draft picks. I'm always going to have draft picks providing me free, well, not free, but very cheap labor. So you can't get me to worry about the cap in 2030. And I can't imagine that Brandon Bean should ever worry about the cap in 2030. It is 2025. If we get to 2029 and 2030 and you have not made a Super Bowl, but you are able to say we never had to strip it down, congratulations. Hang the banner.
Yeah.
That's not what this should be about. You are doorstep. He says we're going to keep, you know, trying to kick down the door. Okay. Go buy the most expensive boots. Lots of pairs of them. Get friends. Smash through the door. Financially, a commitment to do it. And going all the way in. Void years, everything. Get stupid with it. Oh, wow. Guys, I'm telling you, in 2030, I don't know if the Bills can field the roster. All right. Let's see it. 803-0550.
To wrap on this real quick, the one thing I was wondering while you were just talking is, does it have to be that it's going to grow forever? Like, is there a lid? Like, it doesn't seem to be right now, but this is why they're trying international expansion and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're trying to find more economic growth in other places. What's the lid on it? But I kind of want to trust, like Brett Coleman wrote this down, right? Who's the guy that might know it's the Eagles owner because he comes from that area, right? Like TV contracts and whatnot. So the guy that maybe would be an expert on this, like he's acting as though he thinks there is no lid.
Even if there is a lid, let's say it got to $500 million and just steadied from there. Okay. Like what's going to happen?
Right.
Josh Allen in his age 34 season might go 7-10. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think Josh Allen would sign up for that. Everything it takes, everything you've got.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and asking you how to divvy up the acquisitions for the Buffalo roster this offseason. How should the Bills balance filling roster holes this offseason? Maybe you covet the draft choices Buffalo has and feels that the Bills should build with youth and athleticism to make them faster on defense for next year. Maybe you want proven veteran players who have done it at this level and would rather have them acquire more free agents for the roster so they're more game ready from week one, right from the jump. You let us know how those percentages should fall in player acquisition this offseason for Buffalo. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 are the numbers to get on board. We do have open lines for you. If you don't have time to give us a phone call, you can always hit us up on the tweet sheet at OneBillsLive. And we'll crack the tweet sheet open now just to get some of your thoughts and get the ball rolling on this conversation. Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And from Football is Life, they say D-line, most resources, draft capital, cap space, boundary players, cornerback and wide receiver, when supreme value presents itself. So looks like from Football is Life wants corner and receiver in the draft, D-line, cap space, use your free agents.
Yeah, they want to spend most of their resources on the D-line, apparently. And I get it. Getting good on the defensive line, really good, is hard. You need big guys who are skilled, motivated, durable, the whole thing. And it's a hard needle to thread to find a bunch of those guys. And like I said yesterday, I think it was, most teams are happy when they got one game wrecker. You know, the Eagles had a couple this last year. They came from inside and outside. And then they got guys who elevated near the end of the season, like, you know, Josh Sweat did. But most teams, you got Max Crosby, your pass rush is set. Miles Garrett, yeah, that's all we need. Let's just get some guys to fill it in then after that. Most teams are in that mode. The Bills would like to get there, basically. And we don't have a game wrecker. We've got some good, solid players who are dependable, and even some durable. AJ Epinesa, Rousseau, those guys don't miss any time, but they're not affecting the quarterback consistently enough to be considered in the class of these other guys, and that's who you're trying to get. So spend a ton of assets, draft picks, free agency money, whatever you want to call it, get a bunch of them, and sift through them, see if you can get to the point, or at least close to the point, where some of the teams with these game wreckers are.
Yeah, and it would seem that the proven pass rushers are in the league now. And I wonder if there is some recency bias, too. We know that every time a team wins a Super Bowl, everybody tries to look at what they did and copy it. I mean, they drafted their two starting outside corners last year, and Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean. So can you decide that corner you can get in the draft and you can plug a guy in who's ready to start right away? Well, maybe if you get the right guy. But I think we can all agree that finding the big guys up front is harder because there are fewer of them. You got more 5'10", 180-pound guys running around than you do 6'5", 300-pound guys running around.
Yeah, I mean, yes. There, think about it. You go to a Bills game a couple of years ago, and you've got a future Buffalo Bill watching a game from the stands in Joe Andreessen. You know, I mean, they're guys out there in the general population who are good enough athletes to get out there, you know, because they got size, speed, athleticism, whatever, and they're young guys. They're coming up. Those guys are plentiful. They're normal size guys who happen to be fast and athletic. There's not that many guys that are 6'5", three Bills or more, who can outrun most people. You know, they just aren't out there. So they're hard to find. You got to spend to get them, find them, and develop them too, because rarely are they a finished product when you get them. One of these guys we're talking about in the trade market, we'll talk to Mike Jannetty when we get him on from Spot Track about how likely it is that a guy like, you know, Trey Hendrickson or Max Crosby or Miles Garrett, no matter how bad they want out of their current deal or situation, you know, how likely is it? Everybody would love to have them. But not everybody can afford them, and the Browns themselves may not be able to make it happen, and maybe not even the Raiders. It's tough. They're just hard to find.
Tom on the tweet sheet says, Bean will sign everyone the team needs in free agency, so there is not a specific need when they go into the draft. Smart way to play it. Yeah, I get that, Tom, and that is true. That has been his M.O., try to reduce pressing, glaring needs as much as possible in free agency so you don't feel compelled to lean that way in the draft and maybe reach for a player when you shouldn't. Totally get that and respect that approach. I'm just wondering, for roles like, let's just say, outside corner, where Rasul Douglas is a free agent and may not be back. Starting safety, where Damar Hamlin's a free agent and may not be back. Defensive tackle, where there might not be a single defensive tackle to play the one technique on the roster, knowing who are free agents right now and who could be a cap casualty. So specific starting roles, you want to fill those with all three of those spots on Buffalo's defense with free agents? Or do you want to go one free agent, we'll spend big, be really good up front,
and then let's just draft the rest and hope some of those guys are starting caliber by the time we get out of the preseason.
I'm with you, Brownie. I get that. But here's the thing, and he's said it before, and they're right. I mean, Tom is right from the tweet sheet. They will not go into the draft with any positional emergency where they've got to get a guy, where they have to get an outside corner, where they've got to get a defensive line, or one technique, or three technique. They will not go into the draft without every spot on the roster at least having a stopgap guy, at least, if not a guy who can compete. They will not do that because when you get in the draft, if there is a positional hole in your draft card, in your roster before you hit the draft, it's a old saying, need is a horrible evaluator. And if you go into the draft, got to have an outside corner, well, you're going to get a guy who's either, you're going to draft a number one round, a first round guy who really should have been a late second because you got to get him. Now you've wasted all that value between the first round guy and a late second round guy. That's all gone away. And if the guy you take is just a guy, it's a waste. So you can't go into the draft, and he won't. He will not go into the draft with any position on the team that is an emergency. And so, you know, we're going to have guys to line up when the draft hits. But they're going to need some guys who can step in and play, too. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering what the percentage breakdown is going to be. Is it going to be 60% free agents and, you know, 30% draft choices and, you know, 10% trade? Or, you know, what's that breakdown going to look like by the time we get to training camp?
If they have, like, signed right now, and I don't know what the number is, how many guys are on the roster right now, I can check SpotTrack, but if you look at how many guys they have under contract right now, and the Bills right now have 60.
Okay.
Right. So they've got, you know, enough to fill out a roster, but only the top 51 count at this time of year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to get up to, you know, max is 69 guys, it's 53 roster and 14.
Well, no, it's 90 in the offseason.
Right. Okay. So you're going to get 10 draft picks. So there's 30% of the guys you have left to sign. If you get 10 draft picks, that's 10 of the 30 guys you're going to sign. You're going to get 20 free agents in here, 20 of them, because they're going to sign them all. Maybe some of them will be rookie free agents like that, preferred free agent, all that. But that's going to be it. You've only got so many draft picks you can pick. So they're going to have to bring in 20 guys. If they get 10 draft picks, there's room for 30 more guys on this roster. They're going to get them all.
Yeah. And there's undrafteds, too, that could factor into that as well. Undrafted rookies could be a part of that equation, too.
I got to tell you, I thought we were well past Andy Dalton makes the sports update days. Wait, what? Did that just say Andy Dalton got a contract? What? Andy Dalton? Oh, okay. I mean, he's not that
slow
old.
Slow season, buddy.
But wow. I mean, you know, I guess you could do worse as a backup quarterback. Like, I don't know how much less faith I'd have in Andy Dalton than Mitch Trubisky.
I would have,
honestly,
notably more faith.
Yeah, okay.
I would have notably
more
faith.
There you go, then. Yeah. I rescind any skepticism about Andy Dalton warranting a contract extension, because I think that just says it all. Would you feel better about him being the backup quarterback?
Surely.
Probably? Okay. Yeah. So I don't feel good about...
Having said that, if somebody needs to be sold on Mike White, Dan Lepperfeld will do that for you. He will sell Mike White.
He wants to get you into that car today.
Yes, he does.
By the close of business.
Right.
He doesn't even need to go talk to the other guy.
No.
He's just going to.
That's right.
He's got the financing
you want. Price shopping this, sir.
He's going to throw in the Z-Bart. I mean, he is getting you everything.
To get you the undercoating
for
free.
He's got everything you need.
Oh, you need custom, what are those?
Oil changes?
Yep. For life.
For life. No, oh, no, we'll come get you. Yep. We'll drive you back and forth. Shuttle, everything.
Free tire rotation.
You're all set. It's a slightly used, probably damaged Mike White.
Slightly is certainly carrying a lot of weight.
All right, Nate Geary's in for Mike. I am the Bulldog. Thanks for hanging with us today here. We did talk to Dan Lubberfeld on the Jets. That's where this Mike
lovely.
White sidebar is coming from. And Marcel Louis-Jacques last hour on the Dolphins, too. So, the priority list here. The Bills, again, not that they... I mean, I could ask you a broader question. Like, what is your off-season... Like, what's at the top of the list for you as we embark on this months-long process of guessing, prognosticating, ultimately talking about the moves the Bills do and do not make? Like, what's... You must have a list. I don't know if you've got it prioritized, if you're ready to prioritize it live on the radio, but like, what needs to get done for the Bills in 2025 in the offseason here?
And just in terms of retaining and roster players, not necessarily the other stuff. Right?
Sure. Okay, yeah. Sure. We can focus on the four guys that I mentioned as we went to the break that are due
and
contract
really
extensions.
It's five.
Okay. Who's
I would say Rousseau's in there.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
You know, like, yes. I would say it's fine.
Absolutely. He's going into a walk year.
Yep. Yep.
Fifth year option. Yeah.
You know, I thought about this recently, just about, like, you know, where, especially just with the James Cook conversation, right? I think that's probably the first extension you should look at. And I know it doesn't necessarily mean I think he's the priority. I just think in terms of how you can set a contract like that that will allow you to set up the other contracts.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would be the first domino, not the most important one, but the domino that gives them the clearer picture of how they're going to structure other contracts. A five-year deal that's probably more like a two with an out with three void years makes a ton of sense for me. For me, I think James Cook is an incredibly important piece to the puzzle. And I know he's not a guy that's playing 70% of the snaps, and they don't, and I don't see that changing next year, or even if they re-sign him, I don't really see that changing.
That is a big thing in the way of committing top of the market dollars to any running back, to me.
I think he more than likely get that 5-year deal with you know void years looks like it's $15 million a year on average.
Yeah, but it's
bunch of money, like a big old fat signing bonus right off the bat. And then just throw all that money into those void years and figure it out. Like, that's where the Bills are right now. The Bills are at the point where they have tons of space the next 2 years, 26 and 27. Tons. They're going to, the contracts that they sign right now, that's why I think free agency is more in play than people think. Maybe not the big trade that everyone's, the Crosby or the, maybe that trade's not there, but they could get a big swing. They could go for an $18, $20 million player a year and just have it be in one of those 2 years. So I think James Cook's the first guy. To me, the most important player to lock up is Christian Benford.
Yeah.
He's the first.
I agree 100%.
Real lockdown corner that you didn't have, that has been playing on the most valuable contract you probably could have on a team, playing that type of role and having that type of impact. Obviously, like, you know, you want to see him come back 100% from the head injuries. 2 in 2 weeks is not great. But I think to me, he is number two. To me, number three ends up being Shakir. And I think Shakir is kind of the archetype, the mold of guys that they're going to want to continue building around on offense. I don't think his number is going to be outrageous. I think you can get him on a pretty team-friendly deal and be a guy that you build around offensively. And that would obviously lead us to Bernard being kind of the last guy on this list, or Rousseau, however you want to look at it. And it's not to me to tell you that I don't think Bernard's the fourth most important person you have to sign. I just think you could probably wait another year on Bernard, wait till he gets to free agency, tag him. Middle linebacker's not the most insanely high
market.
You know, market. Yeah. You could transition tag him as well. So there's some things you could do with Bernard. It might also make sense to sign him after a down year, which I guess in theory he had, considering how good his second season was. Some injuries, didn't have the same big play impact, but he's still a guy I think you're building around moving forward. You might be able to get him at a number that you really like this year, like the Ed Oliver contract, where in a year he's like the 25th highest paid player at his position, something like that. I think he's hugely important to what they want to do moving forward. And I think if like that's how you're going to prioritize those guys, that's probably how I would do it, just based on what they're going to make, how you fit it into the puzzle. I think the other conversation of this too is not just, hey, these guys that are resigning. I think it's where are you with Vaughn? Where are you with Matt Milano? Where are you with some of these key pieces that I think are could be in play, but I think you could easily get to a case where you let Vaughn and Milano both walk this offseason. Like, cut them and just move on and figure it out. I think you probably don't want to really do that with Milano, but I also think you're probably at a point where you're saying he's past 30. He's coming off two long-term injuries. He finally flashed towards the end. Like, okay, the athleticism is back. And I think that maybe gives them another year with that. But I don't. They didn't pay two linebackers before.
Right.
And I don't think they're going to do it now.
Right.
So I think if you want to wait on Bernard because you want to have Milano under contract for another year, I think you could do it.
Yeah. I wonder if you can work. I mean, the player's got to be amenable to it, obviously.
Yes.
And, you know, that might make, in certain circumstances, that can be a lot to ask. I mean, Milano certainly has had to work to get back.
Yes.
So it's not like he's just been sitting home, you know, eating ice cream while he's been hurt. The rehab, I think anyone would tell you, is harder than playing and practicing and doing all that. So he's been, you know, he's been sweating it out. But I wonder if you can't get a break on his contract at this point with his age and see if like he wants to be still around and be a part of it. Cause I do think there's value in bringing him back. I'm just not sure about the number anymore on him. So I'd be looking to adjust the contract, if not flat out cut, you know, pay cut, Milano.
Yep.
I like Bernard a lot. To me, it's not, if it comes together at a number that you like, great. If not, kick it down the road. I can wait on that. I don't know that I want to lead off with Cook. I wonder how they're reacting over there to what he's done publicly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, I just think the whole thing just sort of came out of nowhere to me.
I don't disagree.
And it seems like the sort of thing you would start doing when you already know you're in some sort of a battle for hearts and minds, if you will, right?
Yeah.
For, with the fans. Like, you're trying to get people on your side.
That really wasn't the move that did it.
I don't think you needed to fire the first shot, unless the first shot has already been fired behind closed doors, and we don't know. This early in the offseason, maybe the agent already talked to Brandon Bean. He was like, yeah, we're not doing an extension this year for your guy. It was just not in the cards.
Yeah.
which, you know, you talk about negotiating on a down-ish year. Well, tying for the league lead in rushing touchdowns is maybe not the optimal time to negotiate the new contract for your running back.
And I think if you're the agent, you think it's the perfect time to start negotiating.
Of course it is, right? Yeah. So what matters here? Well, the player being one of the engines, the key engine to your offense. Obviously, Allen is the engine, but Cook is certainly a very nice complementary part. I think given the state of their receiving core and their tight ends, he's the most impactful, important supporting part to their offense. But he still doesn't play enough for me to say I'm going to devote $13, $14, $15 million. And so I don't know if I want to start there. I might be inclined to sort of go to the mattresses on Cook. I've got you for a fourth year. I've got a franchise tag if I want it. I don't have to settle this with you now. If you're stuck on this annual average value, even if it's a farce, I mean, I don't know what really that accomplishes other than massaging one's ego. You get to see the big boxcar number, annual AAV, this or that, and that helps you sleep better at night, even though you're not going to see the final 3 years of it. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, whatever. Plenty of players have done it. I don't think I would start there on Cook. I would want to at least see how noisy he gets if I don't act on it. Right? I guess I'm going to dare him a little. You know, the risk is that, what, you alienate him Does that alienate other people on the team? You know, like everybody wants guys to be taken care of. I don't think the Bills players themselves are going to tell you running backs don't matter, right? They watched James Cook score 16 touchdowns on the ground this year. They're thinking that we, you know, pay our guy. He's got to be back. So it could get a little tricky. This is kind of the first one of these they've really had. I mean, I know they went to the limit with Poyer, yep, and let him go find out what was out there, and he didn't like what was out there, so he ended up coming back. Milano in his year heading into free agency, I know I wasn't optimistic, but they got it done.
Yep.
They really haven't had anything that puts them to the test, right? And
I think it's too because, like, I'm thinking last year, you could telegraph they were not going to be in it with Gabe Davis. Like, at the start of the season, there was no, like, hey, like, is your agent? That was just like, yep, we're going to get to the end of the season and we're going to assess then. I think the team knew, like, we weren't really interested in this moving forward. We want to change. Like, just all the, like, same with, Edmonds. Nobody really thought, especially, it appeared they had
made their choice.
Made their choice by paying Milano.
Right.
I think this is the first one where you're like, I think both sides would really like to continue on, and I just wonder if they can. I think where I come back in is the importance of how the offense, if this is how you are constructing your offense moving forward, that having a James Cook style player is going to be hugely important to their offense because he was their big play guy. If you don't have James Cook this year, I know 50% of the snaps, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you don't have James Cook, you don't have big plays. Who else was getting you big plays this year?
There was not much at all.
So no. He's probably right now across the league the best big play threat in the running back backfield in the league. I don't think he's the best running back in the league. I think he's the best big play threat you have in the league that's at running back. And that's a unique thing. It's like CJ Spiller, but he's a real running back. And I think, like, this year, I agree with you to an extent. Like, I'm only viewing him as the first one because if you're going to re-sign a running back and you really believe this is how you're going to build your offense as long as Joe Brady's here, this is the image of our offense, then Cook might be the second most important player on offense outside of Josh Allen.
Right, and that I don't want that to be true.
I don't want
a running back to matter that much.
Yeah,
but you know he right did. Now it did. He did. Does. He did, and like so here we are.
And yeah, like all of this to say,
all the more reason to not do it now.
Here's the hard part.
If he wants it now, I understand you want it harmonious and all this. It's the worst possible time for them to do it. If he goes out and has another year like last year again this season,
yeah,
and the price just goes up, then
they're out.
I guess I have to take that chance, but I don't want to get into it right now.
Here's the little window you're playing with here, though. It's not ideal because right now you have arguably the deepest running back draft in 10 years.
Right.
This year, not next year, this year. You also want to bring back Ty Johnson.
I think you should want to bring back Ty Johnson.
And you also have Ray Davis. So what are you going to draft a running back to be a potential future guy? Where does that guy – you're going to keep four running backs on the roster? Are you willing to see if Ray Davis is going to hit the practice squad? I don't think that's happening.
No.
I don't know how you take a running back this year – keep your group. I just like that. That is really tough.
Yep,
I mean, it's a numbers game. It's when will you, won't you, when you won't, like when will you or when won't you? This is not an enviable position for Brandon Bean. And I'm not here to tell you, I think James Cook made it harder or worse, or James Cook agent made it harder or worse. But I do find it kind of interesting. The one guy that McDermott, right, and I don't want to tell you that I remember a lot of other guys where McDermott spent 2.5-3 minutes just glowing about.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say that he doesn't do it. It's just not really his style. It's like
right,
he'll,
right.
Hey, he was great. You know, we're working on it. Like, he's more quicker, I think, to criticize, lightly criticize, tell you we want more, than he is to go on a soapbox and tell you the demeanor of a certain player and his growth and his work ethic and the production. Like, he just, he was like making it a point. When McDermott does that, he's doing it for a reason, and he does it a lot. He's a very
calculated
communicator. When he wants to tell you something, because he never tells you anything, when he does, it's like the when he speaks, it speaks volumes. Like, that's kind of to me, the substance of that was before this situation came out where he wants $15 million, was like 2 days prior. Then that kind of thing came out. That says something to me. It's got to say, I don't know what it says, but it says something. And I think there's just like this very small, minuscule, like needle hole that you have to thread, I think, here so that everyone's happy, which, by the way, means you are happy. The organization is happy. Like, there are probably guys you could go get in the third or fourth round this year at running back that could be a similar style player to James Cook. But man, I just think when it's perfect, I think you got like Cook, Shakir, Kincaid, and like a good number one caliber level receiver. And I think you really got something there on offense.
Who is that receiver? Keon Coleman? We both made a face.
Yeah, I don't know. Unfortunately, now people can see us.
I know.
Yeah, there's no hiding any longer in this studio.
We just both made a face. yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's a tough time. Well, I want to get to Benford because the price tag on him is going to be massive.
Yes.
And I think that is the priority. I mean, the talking about Cook, there's the running back part of the conversation. There's him going public. That's part of the conversation. There's the depth chart part of the conversation. So it ends up sort of taking over, I feel like, whenever we start talking about this subject. Man, Benford is a you can't lose him caliber player to me right now.
Yep.
And also that means you're at kind of top of the market and or like close to it.
All right. So just to move on from that one, Joe, I do find it interesting when it comes to the Bills, the dominance that they have had taking their turn, so to say, dominating within the AFC East. Mm-hmm. Because it's been separated in eras. You know, before that, obviously, it was the Patriots. And then the Bills had it for a little while fighting with Miami, with Jim Kelly, Dan Marino leading the Bills and Dolphins, respectively. And, yeah, you know, kind of fighting between the two teams with dominance within the AFC East. The Jets don't really have that run because they're the Jets. But considering the Indianapolis Colts have a division title more recently than the New York Jets do. And they're not in our division.
That's crazy. That's insane.
And it made me think, yeah, right? It makes me think, and I hope it does for you too. Who is the team that you really think could threaten the Bills the most in the coming years?
The Patriots.
I think that I'm going to agree with you, but I also want to pitch my case about the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins as well, just so that we have that food for thought.
Yeah. I mean,
when it comes to right now, Miami is still obviously that team. But they clearly are stuck in the mud, almost plateauing with the current core that they have.
Yes.
To a point where there might really need to be some changes radically within the organization. Mike McDaniel, I think, is a good enough coach that he should be staying there. I don't know if he needs to necessarily be punished for the roster that Chris Greer has put together. I think the GM needed to go, and the fact that he was not released tells me that Miami is perfectly fine with the status quo and doing another year of tire spinning.
Probably.
Greer has done a bad job putting together an offensive line, putting together a defense that they get rid of Vic Fangio at defense coordinator, and then all of a sudden, oh, he's ho-hum coaching up a Super Bowl winner. Yes, the defensive talent within Philadelphia is far and away better. But I think that's the indictment on a general manager, is you need to collect talent. Instead, you've put together a team that is good for track meets and early season, but they still cannot ever beat teams over 500. They still have a problem when it comes to playing below 40 degrees. So Miami is...
You put together the Dallas Cowboys of the AFC East.
Yeah, and so that makes Miami probably the biggest one in danger of putting themselves into a hole and needing to hit the reset button and doing it after the Jets and the Patriots will have.
Yeah.
The case for the New York Jets, it's not a good one, but a franchise with this much ineptitude, you need to make sure you preface it by saying that. But the case for the New York Jets has to go with this. They are starting over. There are still a lot of quality pieces on that roster.
Mm-hmm.
So a full rebuild down to the floorboards is probably not necessary. Try to get yourself a quarterback. It's not a great quarterback class.
No.
But if you find the right guy.
Kirk Cousins is out there.
Oh, that's not the right guy. that's what I was about to say. You find the right guy, even if it's only for a year, you still have a threatening roster. You got to make sure that everything's on point, though. Because in New York, the scrutiny is higher. And for New York, a team with the longest playoff drought in football and in all of sports even, that pressure is intensified, especially in a market like New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they play in New Jersey. They are still the New York Jets. They still have to deal with the New York media. So call it what you will. But my case for the Jets is if you get a quarterback, because scouting is one of the most inconsistent things in all of the world. I said it's not a great quarterback class. All you need is one. And I think that's really what my optimism for the case for the Jets is. Not optimism, but like trying to make a devil's advocate case for the Jets. Is that all it takes is one. You get a guy, he ends up being good, and the next thing you know, you're trying to threaten. The Patriots, Joe, as you answered, what is it about New England that makes you think that they are confidently the team that would next threaten them?
Vrabel, Drake May, solid rookie quarterback. They finally get some pieces around him, whether draft or free agency, right? I think that's a better match coach-wise. I think Vrabel was always the one, too. I'm not going to lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, it seemed like he just wanted that gap year, and they gave it to Gerard Mayo for the time, but they always kind of planned on Vrabel, you know? Like, I always had that inkling in my head, because why wouldn't they have Vrabel as the coach, especially after the Hall of Fame induction? But, I think Drake May, you saw what he did against Buffalo.
Yep.
Starters in Buffalo. Yeah, they didn't really have a season at that point, right? They were just kind of figuring things out towards the end. He's a solid quarterback. So I think that's a great foundation to go off of, a better foundation than Mac Jones.
Yes.
And I think they're the most ready to build right now and kind of work their way up to go against Buffalo, where Miami, like you said, kind of stalled out, spinning tires. And the Jets are in full rebuild right now.
I think just to add to your case about the spinning tires comment there, it was also good of New England to recognize that what they had begun building was not enough and they wanted to start over.
Yeah, like they had self-reflection.
You could put your feet in the ground and try to like dig yourself in and say, no, Mac Jones is the guy. The Patriots very quickly and correctly said, no, he's not. We gotta do this again. They very quickly recognized that the quarterback was not going to be the long-term answer. They got rid of him for pennies on the dollar, considering the investment of a first-round pick, and they moved on. That, I think, helps you, the situational awareness of knowing what you have and what you don't have. That allows you that opportunity. Mike Vrabel, I mean, I think that he's an okay coach. I don't know if he's necessarily what I would call a great coach, but he should be an improvement on Gerard Mayo. They need to fix up that offensive line, though, if they're going to get any traction on trying to like at least make it to second in the division like this year. You cannot have the same offensive line, and you need to drastically rework it. I would imagine that any of the five starters on New England's offensive line, you better change at least four of them. And pretty much pour all of your assets and hard work in the offseason into fixing it.
Right.
That and your skill position players. You have no real threats on the outside that can do major damage. Like Kendrick Bourne's a nice piece, but he's a depth piece. Get Drake May weapons. Get Drake May protection. You have a good enough defense to where you do frustrate teams from time to time. So I'm in agreement with you on this, and just to build off of your case or your answer.
Yeah. Now, question for you.
Yes.
Piggyback to that. NFL-wise, who's a team you're looking at that's going to be dangerous? A lot of people are saying Chicago with Ben Johnson, right? I think the Carolina Panthers.
The Carolina Panthers have to rework their defense. You want to talk about the fact that, like, yeah, Miami lets players through. Carolina, by a lot, let up the most points in the league last year. Do you know how many points they let up last year, Joe?
No, I do not off the top of my head.
I've got your fun number for you here, and boy, it is a doozy.
Okay.
534.
Yeah, that's not good. That's really not good.
No, it's not good. The next worst was 468.
And who is that?
Dallas.
Oh.
Cowboys.
America's team. Not.
Yeah, so.
I think if they do a little work in the offseason on their defense, though, Bryce Young has really come into his own, and they won close games with him, right? I think they could be dangerous. I think people are going to sleep on them, too, because of the defensive stuff. I don't think they're really going to expect anything out of them. And I think that we saw the expectations with the Bills this season, what that can do. That lets you play fast and loose, just free football, right?
Yep.
So, I don't know. Bryce Young in that environment, I'd like to see. Who's your team?
I like Carolina. I think they've got a lot of work to do on defense, though. Like, that's a whole roster. It's one thing for, like, example, the New England line trying to fix an entire offensive line. Fixing up an entire defense, that's a lot harder to do. For me, I'm probably going to go with I'm probably going with the easy answer here. Cincinnati has enough pieces, but their owner needs to really – like, ownership in Cincinnati really needs to whip into shape here and actually invest into the team. So if it's not Cincinnati, then maybe that's not the easy answer. But I would say that the Bengals are probably top on that list for me. Arizona is also fascinating. They are a team that they missed out on the division by 2 games. They were very good at home this year. They just need to figure out the consistency and stop collapsing in December. In January.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be nice, right?
And I think they've got enough pieces in place. They are a good team. And they just need to make some improvements. The chemistry between Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr. has to improve. And I expect that it will. So I'd expect Arizona to take that next step and try to pry away the West from the LA Rams, who rumored to be getting rid of Cooper Kupp. Obviously, Matt Stafford is not going to be getting any younger. There's an opportunity there. And Seattle keeps just losing it on tiebreakers. Like strength of schedule tiebreakers, not even the good kind. So it's an inconsistent division. Try to take advantage of that inconsistency. So yeah, I like Arizona and I like Cincinnati in the AFC.
Get some calls in here. 803-0550. Derek in South Carolina. Hey Derek, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys, man. Thank you so much for taking my call. I love your guys' show, man.
Thanks, Derek.
Thank you.
Yesterday with all your how cold it is, I loved it yesterday morning. But anyways, I would love the Bills just run it back one more time. You know, I wish we could keep, you know, the same players and just run the team back one more year. You know, I mean, just I think we did great. I mean, I think we just got hosed on a couple calls, but you know, I would love to run, you know, just to see the Bills run it back one more year.
But why would they not try to get better players?
I mean, we didn't do bad this year. You know what I'm saying? We really didn't do bad. I mean, especially if James Cook shows up, like you guys said, we don't know how that's going to go. If he shows up to OTAs or minicamp or he holds out. I mean, I hope he don't. But,
well, one thing I would say, thanks, Derek. One thing I would say is it's always important to remember that things are not linear. The Bills made the AFC Championship game and then had to wait four more years to get back there. And all the other teams are having an offseason where they're going to try and get better. That's Baltimore. That's the Chargers, the Bengals. I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that are going to try to have themselves an offseason, and I certainly do not want the Bills to stand still.
If they did have an almost nothing offseason and basically ran it back, how do we think that would go? Really, like how do we think that would go? Because I've said a few times, I think they're going to have regression on the turnovers.
Here's the difference. If they ran it back, what would happen? The same season, except they maybe instead lose to Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore was a coin flip of a game where they won the turnover battle 3-0.
Yep.
And got a guy to drop a game-tying pass.
Yep.
And as much as we like to think, well, the quarterback will just go down the field and score points, we've now seen in multiple playoff games that he doesn't do that or hasn't done that every time. Not blaming him. Just we have this idea that that would happen every single time we want it to, and it doesn't happen every single time we want it to. I mean, do you want Mack Hollins to be your number one receiver again? No way. I don't even want Amari Cooper. I'm writing off the Cooper idea. I want almost nothing to do with it.
I'm more and more start wanting to write off the Hollins idea. He was cool. Everyone liked him. He wore an animal costume on his way in to the AFC Championship game. Cool. He caught 30 passes. He was on the field all the time. Right. He caught 30 passes. Well,
30 passes for like $2 million is not bad.
All right. I can get – how many guys can I get to do that?
Plenty, but they probably all cost about $2 million. He'll be cheap again.
That kind of is my point. I don't want a guy making $2 million on the field 60% of the time.
That's because you want somebody else to make more than him.
Or I want Coleman to be better.
Right. He can come back, but just...
I want Samuel to be healthy. Like, really, one thing that's lost about Hollins and all of this, Hollins played as much as he did because Curtis Samuel had a lost season. No?
It's part of it, yeah.
He was injured throughout the entire year. He wasn't giving them a lot. I mean, if Samuel was a hit, Hollins isn't really playing all that much. They traded for Cooper the moment that Hollins was getting targeted on a regular basis, and it wasn't working. So, again, like I don't mean to bury him. He's a super fun player and well-liked, and if he wants to come back and play special teams and be my number five receiver, I'm all in. But I think if he has 50 targets again, that's a failure this offseason.
Gordon in Buffalo is next up. Hey, Gordon.
Hey, boys. Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, so I'm calling in, and I guess I'm saying my word of the day today being adequacy, because if you really want to think about this real quick, you, Jeremy, you read off the amount of second-round picks that have either just hit or missed, but it's been more so misses than a second round, correct?
Yeah, I don't think they've gotten the return on what you would hope to get in second-round picks.
So from what I've heard from you guys, and I've heard from other analysts who have takes on the NFL, it's pretty much that McDermott's defense, like most in the NFL, you have to imagine, rely on pressure because of the zone system that they play. So if they can't generate the pressure with the guys that they're getting, at some point, and before I make this point, I just want to say I completely acknowledge all of Sean McDermott's shortcomings and clock management decisions and everything that comes with that. But at some point, I'm not saying that we have to put Brandon Bean on the hot seat, but we have to really take a look at what's being given and say, hey, the Eagles went out there and stacked up their defensive line with the biggest D-line in football. At some point, you have to just do better than what you have done the last few years. And I understand that Oliver's supposed to be something and Rousseau's supposed to be something, but just to be honest, it's not enough. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Gordon.
He really saved himself from this being, I think, a huge talking point about draft history with what he did, what he landed on in the 22 draft after Elam, because
Cook, Bernard, Shakir, Benford.
Yeah. Like there are enough hits on day three of the draft that are keeping the mob at bay from day one and day two of the draft.
That said, isn't round 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 where you're more likely to just kind of turn it over to the scouts? Is that wrong?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I guess I don't know.
I feel like the board is trusted more later. First round, second round, it's the board and, well, what do we want to do here? Like GMs, This isn't just something I would say of the Bills. Why do GMs even bother going? Why don't teams just put it on auto draft? And the answer is because the GMs put a stamp on the draft.
Right.
It's not just pick the guy that's the highest. It's, well, let's talk about which direction we're going to take.
Let's get stupid. New way of drafting.
Auto draft.
You submit your board to the league before the draft, and then we run it as an auto draft.
I mean, it wouldn't really be good for television.
You just watch it. No, we'd still be, like, you can still wait 3 minutes between picks if you want. We'll be watching. We'll know the Bills are up next. And Bean will be watching it like we all are. Like, he'll know who he's about to get, probably, but...
Yeah. This reminds me of something.
Then we'll know who was actually number one on their board.
You were off last Friday, and I was all set to fight with you about something.
Okay.
We'll get to it in the 8 o'clock.
I don't remember what
this
was.
We'll get to it in the 8 o'clock hour. I gotta remember to do this.
This was the day after Allen won MVP.
Yes.
Yeah.
You tweeted something about the Ravens using the Madden video game.
Oh.
And I'm ready to fight about it. We'll have fun. It'll be a good time. Lindy coming up at 8 o'clock. And Eric Edholm, NFL.com, on the draft and the offseason at 9. 803-0550, our phone number. Idea for a new segment when we return where we it's not let's get stupid. I don't know how to tease it, but I told these guys what it is. What's going on in the chat? You guys got to get on the YouTube feed because the things that go on in this chat, I can't even – it's out of control. Owen's over there, like, moderating. What are you people doing? What's going on in the chat? All right. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
And the thing about Myles Garrett is you can really sort of assess your entire offensive plan to him, stop him, and you still can't do it. If you can get that guy, if you have the cap space to do it, which I know the Bills are sort of in arrears with their cap situation right now, that could take a lot of interesting math. But certainly if you could get Myles Garrett, there's no question about that. That changes your entire defense. He's one of those very few guys who can do that all by himself.
One of our favorites, Doug Farrar, talking about one of the biggest offseason targets, speculation-wise anyways, Myles Garrett of the Cleveland Browns, and what a difference maker he could be for any team, including the Bills. Good to have you with us here. Nate Geary sitting in for Mike Shope today. I am the Bulldog. Lines are open at 803-0550, and just pouring over ideas and trying to define all in. And because I'll tell you, we'll get to calls here in 1 second. I've had, it's very tempting to me to say, you know what? Yes, I'm willing to pay the price. First and a second, whatever it's going to take, like this year's first, next year's first, something else premium, one of the two twos that I've got. Maybe that gets it done for Myles Garrett. If it does, do I stop there? I've said a few times to Mike, if I get Myles Garrett, all right, I Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop are my safeties. I've got my linebackers. I probably rotate some defensive tackles in, but I'm probably done doing anything big. Maybe I'll even resign Rasul Douglas. He'll be better if I've got Myles Garrett up front, right? And just sort of roll the band back basically from last year, but with Myles Garrett up front, and feel like, okay, you know what, I'm ready to go play the feud.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's enough. I agree with your assessment of all in. Like, it's one big move, and it is, you know, robbing yourself of future assets for sure. But does that alone, like, does that sound like a defense that can take down the Chiefs? I mean, maybe. They were close to doing it this year without Myles Garrett. So everybody a year older, yada, yada. I don't know. Like, I feel like that should be enough.
Yeah. I guess where I fall on this defense is that there's holes. There's notable holes in this defense. And as much as I think Myles Garrett's an unbelievable player, I don't think he takes the defense that was, you know, middling to below average to the type of level of defense. Because here's the thing. Maybe this Maybe this just opens things up for Ed Oliver, and Ed Oliver goes back to being the 9.5 sack guy he was 2 years ago. And if that's the case, then there's a ripple effect. It's not just Myles Garrett being great. You've now unlocked a new, well, a previous version of Ed Oliver.
Yeah.
But even then, even if you have two great players on your defensive line, isn't part of what the Eagles did so well is they just were rotating guys in and out. They're deep. They've got, you know, they on top of hitting on those draft picks and some of the – they also signed Zach Bond, who was basically a reserve special team player, turned into an all-pro linebacker. Like, everybody talks about having to win a Super Bowl. There's luck involved, right? Got to have a bounce go here. Ball's got to go there. Turnover, whatever. But they don't talk about – they talk about it in a vacuum in one specific game. They don't talk about it when you're building your roster in the offseason. And the Eagles got lucky in a couple of spots. I mean, them signing Zach Bond in whatever, $1 million,
right,
and he's an all-pro level player. Listen, hats off to Howie Roseman. I don't think he thought when he was signing Zach Bond that he was going to be an all-pro. Otherwise, he would have paid him a lot more money. So, like, the Bills haven't really had that sort of signing where you're like, oh, well, this guy's way better than I thought. Was it DaQuan Jones, his first year? You were like, this guy's pretty good. Yep. Like, I didn't know that that's what they were really getting. Taylor Rapp was okay. He's starting caliber, middle of the road. You know, David Edwards, it's like you just have like guys that are, okay, these guys are good. But they haven't really gotten a guy that has changed the dynamics.
Yeah. Mike Edwards is safety. David Edwards is an offensive lineman.
He's offensive lineman. But that's what I'm saying. Like, he was a guy they signed in for agency. Right, he's turned into a starter. Sorry. And okay,
Yeah.
You know.
One thing, real quick. The Eagles are the team that plants a lot of these seeds. I guess it should be pointed out, you do not need to beat the Chiefs 44-20. Right? You know, you do not need to ragdoll them all over the field and make Mahomes look like a jackass.
Yeah.
You just need to make a couple of plays. Right? Like the gap seems bigger now because we saw the Eagles dismantle the Chiefs and you recognize, oh, that can be done. And maybe I should, you know, pump the brakes a little on Josh had the ball with 2 minutes to go because, you know, maybe he shouldn't have to always, you know, bring them from behind in the last 2 minutes against the Chiefs. Like, get a few more stops. I mean, that's maybe attainable with Myles Garrett added to the defense the Bills put on the field last year, despite everything you said about, oh, I don't disagree with wanting better and maybe needing better, but I don't know. Like, I just need a couple of plays, right? I do not need to shut them down. I mean, that'd be great, but it's almost an impossible bar to reach in one off season, I think.
I agree.
Anyway, so you know, just a thought. Like, it feels like because the gap between what the Eagles did defensively and what the Bills were capable of defensively is so large, represented by, you know, how the games looked, that you can, I think, fall into a trap that is it's a trap, thinking the Bills have so much more ground to make up. When in reality, it's not
that much. Totally.
And that's where the Garrett idea, despite it not qualifying as all in, is still, that's a meter mover, and maybe that's all I need.
I will say, I think that there should be a tradition. Maybe this goes up on a board somewhere in here. I think that after you've exhausted a conversation about how to build the team and the roster moving forward, that everyone collectively just takes a very long, pronounced sigh, and then says, oh, that Kyrie Elam pick really killed us. I just think that should be tradition.
I know.
A day, everybody just has a collective sigh and agrees that hurts in hindsight. Really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they have a huge hole, and it would be nice for him to be the guy to fill it.
And that just seems
not happen.
Not possible.
Not happen.
CJ is first up here at 803-0550 on WGR. Thanks for calling, CJ. You're on the air.
Absolutely. And this conversation is phenomenal, but it opens the door for some crazy talk. And I'm probably going to sound crazy. I haven't done the homework or the numbers. But
go crazy, brother. Go crazy.
So I'm thinking, if you guys want to say bleep them picks, which I know with the Bills drafting so late, it feels as though it's really essentially a second-round pick every year anyway. And our history doesn't really show that Brandon Bean has done well with them. So why not trade them? So either you trade up in the draft because you have multiple rounds with our draft picks. I think it's the second and the third. We have multiple twos and multiple threes.
We don't have any threes this year. The only three they had went to Cleveland in the Amari Cooper trade, but they have two twos because they got one from Houston, which I think belonged originally to Minnesota. Anyway, they've got two twos from the Stephon Diggs trade.
Right. So, like, with our multiple picks, I don't mind trading either up in the draft to get somebody guaranteed that you know for a fact is, like, I don't – a Travis Hunter for – just throw a name out there. Like, somebody with things that you can't teach. Not to mention, let's double dip. Let's say, okay, Browns, we need a corner and a defensive end. What would you give me for Denzel Ward and what do you want for Denzel Ward and Myles Garrett if you can do that? Or – in a free agency, you have a Khalil Mack and you have a Crosby that wants to be out. It may be a little cheaper to trade for them. It costs more, but I think after June 1st, Von Miller gives us back 17 if you release him. So that's just where my mind is, but I'm saying there's different ways or different avenues to do it, and they all help each other as far as a team. We don't need everything, but the way the Chiefs just got beat, if we get to the Super Bowl, I don't think we beat the Eagles, but I do want to be a team that can beat the Chiefs. We're going into a new stadium. Let's at least beat the Chiefs. I can't go to a new stadium still lose to the Chiefs.
In the playoffs, anyway. They have beaten them four times in a row in the regular season. The Denzel Ward idea, I first saw getting some traction online a week or two ago. Maybe it was all while everybody was making the rounds at the Super Bowl. Yep. And he talked about how he and Garrett are sort of like a tandem and that kind of thing. And it piqued my interest. But, I mean, we're getting to a – let's see. Rousseau and James Cook to the Browns, along with two firsts, and I don't know.
Especially if
this gets kind of crazy
from the Browns' perspective, they could probably get more. They will get more if they do them separately.
Sure.
So there wouldn't really. I would guess there really wouldn't be a motivation from the Browns to put them in some sort of package, unless the package was just absurd. They couldn't say no. But I think. Yeah, listen, I mean, we all agree. I said this yesterday. I think the most, probably the least talked about thing right now is their need for a cornerback, too. Because a lot of the attention is going towards that because of the Super Bowl and how it played out. It's all D-line. And every single NFL team watched that Super Bowl and probably thought the same thing. But I left that game and I also felt like, wow, that defensive line was unbelievable. I was like, why is nobody talking about the fact that they've just locked these receivers down too.
Mm-hmm.
It was the perfect marriage between pass rush and coverage, and all of the highlights got put onto the pass rush.
Because a lot of what the Chiefs did to the Bills, especially early in that game, was the quick game.
Boom, out
and
so quick.
I would imagine the Chiefs would have recognized, okay, we're kind of getting our heads kicked in up front here.
Let's just do what we did last week, two weeks ago. Yeah.
And it couldn't.
Never materialized.
It couldn't function. So, yeah, that's where having the coverage ability comes in. And I'm glad the Bills at least look to be, from some of the offseason hires you mentioned yesterday, the guy they brought over from the Patriots,
yep,
man coverage, blitz guy, like they I think recognize they need to be more multiple on that side of the ball. Sorry to sound all coach speaky there, but they just need to be able to be capable of doing more things, have more things at their disposal in the toolbox. And so that's good, but yeah, you need secondary players to make that work, which circles you back to your edict about Kyer Elam a few minutes ago.
I don't want to do it twice a show, but no, for sure once a show.
Okay. We're done then.
The other part of this, and I haven't really heard a lot of people mention this or talk about it. Maybe part of it, I think maybe I was listening yesterday to maybe it was Zach, maybe it was last night. It brought this whole consciousness to me of, like, it is to me a little weird. I think about the last couple of first round picks, especially the last two. Well, Keon Coleman, not first round pick, but also Kincaid. And what was, like, sort of the prevailing comments after they were drafted? Josh was like, I want this guy. This is the guy I want. And, you know, I love Josh. Maybe he has a future in, you know, college and pro scouting. But I really kind of want my GM right now to say, hey, get who you're looking at. I know he'll like, part of it maybe is the interview process and you just like personalities and you fit. But like right now, I think there's a conversation that you have to say, like, I need the Ravens. They didn't need a safety when they took
Kyle Hamilton.
Kyle Hamilton. And he's completely changed their defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just every position he can play. Just, right? It's, to me, you know, the last couple of drafts have been you trade up for Kyrie Lynn because you know you need a corner. They traded up and got a corner, and he's not good. And I think that's the trouble you can get in when you're picking in the late 20s, early 30s every year. You're enamored about a filling a need or a position. And I would really like this team to go back to the ideology of, I need to pick the best player that's here right now, because you don't know when Tre'Davious White's going to tear an Achilles. You don't know when Christian Benford's going to have two concussions in consecutive weeks and miss all but, you know, five plays of the AFC yep. Championship game. And if you have a guy, it's almost the same. They did it at linebacker. They prepared themselves to lose Edmonds
yep.
and immediately had Bernard step in. They had the next year. I remember sitting in here doing post-draft coverage saying, what the hell are you drafting another linebacker in Dorian Williams for? You've got so many. I've got lots of other. Guess what? You needed him immediately.
Right, like a year later, you've got A.J. Klein chasing Travis Kelce around in a playoff game.
You know, like right, they right. just,
yeah.
I want less of, hey, we picked this guy because Josh
you
really
know,
liked him.
I Mike makes this point regularly as well, and I push back the same way, and I'll push back on you on it. To me, I don't know if I've said this exactly this way, but oh, yeah, Josh loved him. Oh, yeah, no, I love.
Of course he does.
To me, that's...
What is Josh going to be? I actually didn't like that guy.
Imagine them saying the opposite, right?
Sure.
To me, it equates to, oh, actually, he was the best guy left on our board, which is what you say after every draft pick, almost no matter what, and we roll our eyes at it. Like, so... Like, to me, I don't know. I've never really put a lot of stock in, like, Allen loved this idea, you know? I think it's right to run stuff past him. He is the franchise quarterback.
For sure. And you don't want to – you're not going to go against, say, Allen's like, I really don't – you're not going to be – we're right. taking him anyways. Right. But, yeah.
Like, I'd love to know if there's ever been a conversation on draft day. Like, did Brandon Bean call him and say – actually, we're thinking about staying at 30 and taking Xavier Legette. And Josh goes, no friggin' way.
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
We're never going to hear about that. And I don't know that it's realistic. I think it's just draft platitude is what that
totally.
Is to me. So I don't put a lot of stock in it. Like, Josh is choosing the players or something. I don't know. I don't really buy it. I think McDermott's choosing everything, frankly. the final say on everything.